You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On Friday, non-farm payrolls increased to seasonally adjusted 292,000 for the December report. The unemployment rate held steady at 5% last month. That's still the lowest unemployment rate since April of 2008. The Labor Department also made some revisions for the previous 2 months, 50,000 more jobs created in October and November than previously estimated. And that resulted in a fourth quarter being the best three-month stretch of job creation in 2015. But we were all sort of asking ourselves in the newsroom, in the business office, is 5% really the unemployment rate? Is that the real unemployment rate? And there's some indication, a lot of indication, rather, that it's not. Scott Sargis is a Chicago-based executive recruiter and founder of Strategic Search Corporation. He is an expert when it comes to these sorts of things, and he joins me now via Skype. Scott, are the numbers that we saw released on Friday an accurate representation of the real number of people unemployed in America?
It is not, because if you look at real unemployment, which adds on those who are involuntarily working part-time, Steve, as well as those who've just given up, that figure goes up almost to double, or 9.9%. You have to look at it from several perspectives. If you look at from the macro perspective of all job candidates, you know, it's hard because it's up to the candidate to report themselves. But in my field, where I place engineering and technical people, the unemployment rate for engineers is almost zero.
And so why is it so hard to get an accurate reading of how many people are actually without work? Why aren't those people who are unemployed and not maybe getting an unemployment check being counted?
As you mentioned, Steve, if you're not getting unemployment benefits anymore, then as a job seeker, you're not motivated to report these figures to those offices. Or if you've given up looking, you're not motivated to give it, you know, because that's the last thing on your mind, is to present those figures to the government. So you have a wealth of people that are, you know, have given up, and they're not motivated to give those figures, so the government can't accurately judge them.
Scott, you know, at one point in 2015, maybe it was 2014, there were as many as 93 million people out of the workforce looking for work but not being counted by the unemployment rate. Does that sound right, or does that sound high?
Well, if you look at the figure from the government, they say that there's 1.8 million, you know, because their total unemployment figures that came out on Friday were 15.7 million. That's 7.9 million unemployed, 6 million involuntarily working part-time, and 1.8 million. Now, I think, and it's hard to accurately tell, that 1.8 million that aren't even counted is very low. But the figure that you had mentioned seems very, very, very high.
So, Scott, what does Friday's report say about the health of the economy overall?
Well, if you look at, this was the 63rd straight month of jobs creation, Steve. So that's a positive thing. So it's building a kind of a positive kind of aura among job seekers. And then there's, you know, several areas, you know, that had created jobs, and it was pretty widespread, because if you look at professional and business services, they rose by 72,000. Healthcare employment rose again at 39,000. Food services and drinking places added 37,000 people. And construction added people for the third straight month, or 45,000 jobs. So it appears, if you look at the positives, that there's a widespread amount of jobs creation. One area is in the food and confectionery industry, maintenance mechanics with high-speed packaging and filling experience, especially Hasten equipment. Another area is in this construction area, as I mentioned earlier, this is the third straight month of jobs creation. Electrical engineers / project managers with commercial construction and renovation experience. And finally, healthcare, which continues to grow. So nurses are in high demand, as well as other healthcare professionals.
So by all measures, the economy is doing well. What do you think could come in its way to bring it to a screeching halt?
Well, you saw it last week in China. you know, China has a lot of our bonds, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, and their economy going down, and defaults, you know, and the financial market. So those types of things are all interrelated to the jobs market.
So people are brushing off their resumes here at the new year and looking for work maybe, or looking for a new job. What advice would you give them?
Well, one of my mantras, Steve, is resumes don't get you hired, you do. And what that means is the resume is a necessary evil, and you should have one and you should have it updated. But one of the best ways to get new contacts is networking. And there's two kinds of networking. There's the traditional networking, Steve, where you tell everyone you know you're looking for a job. That includes friends and family. And there's the new high-tech version of that, which is social media networking, using social media sites like LinkedIn to make connections. Because people do want to help you out, but you have to go out there and ask them about things. And one of the best tools for helping you, Steve, is the 30-second elevator pitch, where you want to do three things. Tell people who you are, what you're looking for, and your two to three greatest strengths. You want to have as much quantitative information in your resume as possible. As I mentioned previously, resume is not going to get you hired, you are, but you want to have as high-powered a resume as possible. And one of the ways to do that is have as many quantitative bits of information as possible. Any ways that you've made money for past employers, any ways that you've saved money, or any patents or any awards that you have, because that is the key. Think of the resume as your advertisement, and numbers can help you really have an impactful resume. So remember that mantra, numbers, numbers, numbers. That means as much quantitative information as possible in your resume so you stand out.
Scott, what about all these college kids that are still struggling to find work after graduating, some of them, you know, a year ago? Why are they having such a hard time finding a job?
Because a lot of kids went after fields, not necessarily with the job in mind, but more what they wanted to do. I'll give you an example. As one of the areas that is in very, very short supply and high demand is maintenance mechanics. And that points to a lot of the schooling. In, you know, there's a lack of good trade schools and a lack of people getting into the trades. But where a welder or somebody who's a mechanic can make $100,000 or more a year, where instead of getting into that field, a lot of the kids had gone into maybe liberal arts or something like that in hopes of being a lawyer or something like that. And then the legal field is on the decline as far as demand is less than the supply. So it kind of points to early on that they're not getting the right advice as far as guidance into the right field, or they're choosing fields without respect to jobs. So it's unfortunate. In an ideal world, you'd like to work exactly in the field that you prefer. But I think there has to be a lot more focus on what is the utilitarian value of the degree or where they're pursuing, and also where the jobs will be projected.
Earlier, you talked about your expertise in the engineering area. Are we focusing enough on STEM education in schools? That's the science, technology, engineering, mathematics.
If you take a step back, where do we rank in math and science? We're pretty low, right? And if you don't have very high math and science credentials, you cannot get in and succeed in engineering and scientific types of degrees, get a PhD in electrical engineering, et cetera. So as a result, where is the innovation going to come from? So yes, if we do not have the talent in those fields and we're not grooming the talent, as our schools are failing because, you know, we're not ranked high in engineering, in math and science, the STEM, types of areas, that's going to hurt us in the long run.
Some other countries are doing a much better job of STEM education. Does the U.S. Risk losing potentially good minds and innovators to some of these other countries, and is it too late to catch up with them?
Well, we always have time to catch up because, I mean, if you look through our history, we weren't the first NASA wasn't the first. The Russians beat us in space, but we caught up and passed them up. So we have a history of catching up. In World War II, we weren't the toughest country in the world, but we caught up because of innovation. So yes, we can do it, but it's going to take a lot of effort and the right kind of effort. We have to have a renewed focus on the STEM areas. We have to come up with new ideas. You know, one of the things that we've been doing with these charter schools, that's a good idea and that's helping out. But there has to be a total macro level of evaluation of what we're doing wrong, what needs to improve, and we have to put the money and effort into making this work with respect to education.
Scott Sargis is president of Strategic Search Corporation, based in Chicago, and is an expert in research and development, scientific, engineering, and technical executive recruiting. On Twitter, at Scott Sargis, and on the web, strategicsearch.com. Scott, thanks for being with us on the Opening Bell, and Happy New Year.
Okay, thanks, Steve, and happy 2016 to you as well.